Hi, welcome to episode 462 of the Fantastic Forecast. I'm David Elliott, and the only food I eat in October is Count Chocula. Enjoy it while you can. Today, the 462nd issue of the Fantastic Four is Fantastic Four Volume 3, Number 33, from September 2000. A Town Called Revelation, by guest writer John Moore and regular artist Salvador LaRocca. The story begins with a very wordy page. Is John Moore a pseudonym for Chris Claremont? It is taking place at the FF's warehouse headquarters at night. But the writer decides to give us a rundown of everything the FF were up to that day. Reed and Sue saw a play. Johnny was flirting with a girl in Washington Square Park. Isn't he seeing Nemorita? I don't know. And Ben was playing in a celebrity softball game. And a rundown of how the building security systems were damaged by tech narcs. So then we see a mysterious person teleport into FF headquarters, plant a bomb, and teleport away. And this comes right after FF got rid of their last bomb, Chris Claremont. So a day later, after investigating the explosion, the trail has led the FF to Arizona. But their Fantasticar starts acting up. An unusual atmospheric disturbance is wrecking havoc with the ship's mechanical systems. Wow, it's still the flying bathtub, by the way. How Salvador LaRocca made it all the way through his entire run without designing a new Fantastic Car, I will never know. And so the Fantastic Flying Bathtub is barreling down toward a small Arizona town. Reed, Sue, and Johnny rush down to the street to clear the way and make sure that no innocent people are hurt. That's kind of what superheroes do, Zack Snyder. Ben guides the ship down onto the dusty streets of the small town. Deputy Beauregard Pfeiffer comes along and tells Ben that he can't park his ship in the middle of the street, and asks if the Fantastic Car is officially licensed by the FAA. No, but it is licensed by the FBA, Federal Bathtub Administration. Ben says they have a special clearance. You ever hear of the Fantastic Four? He says. The deputy replies, don't mean squat around here, bucko. You're causing a public nuisance in my town. Now, if you don't get this goddarn eyesore out of the street, I'm going to impound it and throw you in jail. Do people in Arizona speak like rednecks? That's how he scripted. Sue tells the deputy they're looking for someone who bombed their headquarters back in New York. He replies that they need to put in a request with the county sheriff department. I have better things to do than kowtow to some big New York superheroes who think the world revolves around them. That's funny. I thought the people of Arizona would be far more welcoming to outsiders, right? So they move the Fantastic Car to another place and head to a nearby hotel to check in. They ask for 3 rooms, but the lady at the counter says they have 2 rooms, one for Reed and Sue and one for Johnny, but they don't have a bed big enough for Ben. I'm surprised he doesn't suggest that he share a bed with Johnny. But instead, he says, looks like I'll be camping outside tonight. So, 20 minutes outside of the town of Revelation, Deputy Bo Pfeiffer is going to meet one of the town's most reclusive residents, his father, and tells him about the Fantastic Four coming to town, looking for the person who bombed their headquarters. Deputy Bo thinks that person who bombed the headquarters is his father. Bo's sister doesn't seem happy to hear that the FF are in town, and she says that she has to finish what she started in New York, meaning that she was the one who planted that bomb. And what the hell does this Hick family have against the FF anyway? The father ends up cryptically saying that if what he thinks is true, the FF are the least of their worries. Yeah, they live in Arizona. They should stop worrying about the Fantastic Four and start worrying about Mexicans. Am I right, people? I don't really believe that, but that's the only way I can increase my listenership. Just inject some anti-Mexican propaganda into every episode and watch my downloads go through the roof. Later, at the Royal Desert Drive-In Theater, the FF have set up a base at this old abandoned theater. Johnny asks Sue, remember when Aunt Mary used to take us to the drive-in when we were kids? Is it just me, or do Drive-ins sound terrible. I've never been to a drive-in, but they sound horrible. People actually used to sit in their cars and watch movies? It just sounds crazy to me. Of course, the only good thing about watching a movie in your car is that you can, you know. Let's just say that if Pee-wee Herman had gone to a drive-in theater, he would have not gotten into trouble. So while they work on the Fantasticar, Reed discusses that he found traces of that local soil in the explosive device used at FF headquarters. We also learned that the bomb destroyed an interstellar transceiver that was monitoring a probe sent through an anomaly by Reed's old astrophysics professor. I guess the Pfeiffer family don't want anyone to know what's in that anomaly. Because it's the Mexicans, that's what it is. So Johnny flies up and decides to do a little aerial recon. Sue says that she's going into town to poke around, and Ben's going to work on the Fantasticar. And Reed is having a hard time accessing their database back in New York, so he's going to have to use a ground line using a pay telephone. Oh, that's going to keep him busy for a long time. Reed finds a payphone and calls home, and he has a couple of messages. One from Tony Stark asking to look over some propulsion unit specs, and another from his accountant saying they have some important things to discuss. So later, Ben is working on the Fantasticar when he hears a twig snap because some invisible woman is sneaking up behind him. But no, it's not that invisible woman. Just your normal, everyday, run-of-the-mill invisible woman. A chick in a suit of armor. Ben is able to grab her, but she delivers a powerful electric shock that knocks Ben out. Reed comes along, and he finds the woman putting a bomb on the Fantasticar. He tries to grab her, but she shocks him too, and she runs away. Meanwhile, back in town, Sue is going antiquing. Probably not by choice. It's probably the only shit they sell in this hellhole of a small town. She's having a hard time getting anyone in town to talk to her. You know something is wrong when a pretty young blonde woman can't get anyone to talk to her. She heads into the antique store and starts chatting with a woman in there who seems friendly. She tells Sue that the locals don't take too kindly to strangers. The store clerk has a special mirror with magical powers. Did I mention that she's a Native American? So of course she has a mirror with magical powers that will show her something different about herself every time she looks into it. Sue takes a look inside into the mirror and she's like, "Oh my." What she sees is herself as a woman in the Old West, dressed in an old-timey Western dress, most likely as a town whore, and this guy is there washing his face, most likely after using her services. Sue says that she's a married woman, and the guy's surprised. "Married? Since when?" And he calls her Connie. She asks what year it is, and he starts to say it's 1970-something, but before he can finish, a guy on the other side of the door yells out, "Colt, I know you're in there." Sue realizes that he's the Western hero, Kid Colt, who has apparently been using the services of Miss Connie. The other guy, Moses Kincaid, says, "Colt, you left me hanging back in Abilene, you double-crossing polecat. Now you're going to die." And he shoots a hole in the door with his rifle. As the bullets fly in, Sue blocks them with a force field. Moses Kincaid calls her a witch. Kid Colt defends her honor, saying, "That's a downright impolite thing to say about a lady." "Yeah, she's not a witch. She's a whore." "Much better, much better." And he punches Moses in the face. Sue and Colt run outside and jump on his horse, and they ride off. They notice some fires in the distance coming from the mines. Back in the year 2000, Johnny's flying around, and he sees this creature called the Howler. It looks like kind of like a large dog with horns and a mane. It leaps out and attacks Johnny, knocking him out. Oh, poor Johnny. He's had more concussions than an NFL player. At this point, shouldn't his mind be a complete mush? Johnny rolls down the hill and lands by the side of the road, and this blonde woman with big boobs driving a convertible stops and has a look. Okay, I'm positive that John Moore is a pseudonym for Chris Claremont. The new woman introduces herself as Anastasia Contieres, Stasia for short. She tells Johnny to get in, you know, into her car. Get your mind out of the gutter. Later, night has come, and Ben and Reed are flying around in the Fantasticar. They were able to remove the bomb before it blew up. They follow a heat trail left by Sue, and they come to this huge house in the desert. They put these special spectrum filter goggles on, and they see a building that was cloaked. A huge, futuristic-looking dome. Well, first of all, how did they know the dome was there, and how did they know to put the goggles on in the first place? That doesn't make any sense. They find this big air vent in the dome, and they fly through, and on the other side, it looks like some kind of tropical jungle. Reed says it's like a greenhouse. Up in the ceiling, watching the Fantastic Car, is that woman. What's her name? Deputy Bo's sister. Did they give her a name yet? I don't think so. And the Fantastic Car lands. She hits a button saying, "Computer, open the pens!" Which is never a good thing. You know where they keep in pens? Animals! Dangerous, bloodthirsty animals! And dogs, but mostly bloodthirsty animals. In this case, the big, bloodthirsty critter is a large, green, prehistoric-type alligator monster. It knocks Ben aside and starts wrestling with a stretched-out, all-over-the-place Reed. Ben gets knocked into some big, gooey spiderweb gunk and slowly breaks free, and he gets out and he socks the large reptile in the chin. But then, more lizards show up and they surround Ben and Reed. But before more fighting can occur, Papa Pfeiffer and his daughter show up, and the dad apologizes for his daughter's behavior. The daughter just wants to let the lizards rip Ben and Reed to pieces, saying they deserve to die. The father introduces himself as Quinn, and his daughter is Miranda. They explain that they came here from another world and are posing as humans. They're explorers, the last of their race who came to Earth 10 years earlier, and made it their home. Their world was destroyed by an interstellar scourge called the Obliterator. And the reason they were trying to destroy the probe that Reed sent into the anomaly is because now they've attracted the attention of the Obliterator. And guess what the Obliterator does? My guess is that he obliterates stuff. Quinn Pfeiffer says that the Obliterator is on his way now to destroy everything on Earth. And we see a big, creepy spaceship floating over the town of Revelation. And that is the end of our story. To be continued next time, of course. We'll find out whether or not Earth survives. My guess is, yes it does. We also find out how Kid Colt ties into all this. My guess is, he doesn't. But who can resist a story with cowboys and aliens? Actually, come to think of it, most of us can. So that's it. If you have any questions about the Fantastic Four, about this podcast, or if you need relationship advice, you can email me at podcastff@gmail.com. You can download other episodes of iTunes and find them all at www.podcastff.podbean.com. So long, kids. This podcast is over. Here they come buying up the street. This neighborhood got too fat to run. Fucking I have to pull the old shell down. Broken teeth get a new white crown.